NSSP Audio on Neutrality by Board Member Jose Stevens. To view more topics within the SSP Audio Library, please visit shamanicpractice.org.
Hello, this is Jose Stevens from the Parapath School of Shamanism, and this is an audio on how to be neutral. From a shamanic point of view, there's nothing more important than coming from a place of neutrality, especially when you're doing shamanic work. In general, this isn't very well understood, because most people think of being neutral as being dull or without any personality. Maybe they think of neutrality as being aloof, detached, or insensitive, maybe even uncaring, or not really living. Most people have been taught to believe that they should be passionate and engaged in their work about helping people and so on, but this way of thinking creates a false dichotomy. The problem is not being passionate versus being neutral. In fact, these two ways of being are quite compatible together. You can be passionate and engaged about your work and know how to be objective, receptive, and clear at the same time. You can be passionate without frenzy, or without fear, or anger, or zealousness, believe it or not. There's nothing dull about being neutral, because it's actually the hallmark of a quiet mind, and that's the gateway to powerful wisdom. Unfortunately, most people equate passion and engagement with drama, but those are completely different things. Drama may at times be used consciously in shamanic work to produce altered states and facilitate a healing process, but it's used consciously as a tool and not haphazardly or unconsciously or in a state of identification, meaning that your ego is involved or you have an axe to grind or you are so identified with your agenda that you can't see the forest for the trees. In emergency work, long-distance healing work, and working to release trauma from the land or people, personal drama is actually an interference. Let's take, for example, this scenario. Let's say you've been injured in an accident, and an EMT arrives to offer you some assistance and help. And what if she said, "Oh, you poor dear, what a mess you are. You look terrible. Who the hell did this to you? How dare they leave you in this condition? I'm so angry." Let's say they begin to sob uncontrollably. "I'm so sad for you. It's so painful to see you in this state." Meanwhile, you're probably grimacing in pain thinking, "And just how are you helping me right now?" Now, I realize that this is an exaggeration, but it's merely to make a point. If you're going to work shamanically on someone or in some situation, if your approach is like this, they might be thinking, "Who sent this bozo to work on me? Get them out of here. Send me a professional." So empathy and compassion are different from identification. When you identify with someone's or something's pain, you feel their pain, as Bill Clinton was famous for saying, "I feel your pain." Yet, this is entirely unnecessary. Feeling someone's pain is different from understanding that someone is in pain and having compassion for them. You don't want to match the energy of the trauma, because all that happens is that you become traumatized as well, and then you can't be of any help. You become part of the problem. So you want to step back and see all the parts, and bring your curiosity and your interests so that you gather information. You can assess what's needed and formulate a plan of action. Let's take a moment to understand the mechanics of creating drama around healing work. Now, many doctors, nurses, and EMTs report that what got them interested in the work in the first place was the drama of the ER, the code blues, or the scene of the accident. But you know, that wears off fairly quickly. And what you end up with is a lot of traumatized care workers. What many of them have told me is that, in a sense, their attraction to the drama was an attempt to work out their own trauma, but in an external way, so they wouldn't really have to deal with it themselves. And of course, over time, this never works. And now they've just added new layers of trauma to their own. Once they learn to handle their own trauma and not confuse it with saving people, they actually became much better at their work. So if you think about it, getting involved in someone else's trauma is a kind of theft. It grabs the attention away from them and puts it on yourself. It's a form of excitement, a vicarious ripoff of somebody else's experience for your own gratification. And that's not the shamanic way. From a shamanic point of view, it's not helpful to need to help other people. If someone needs help, then help them without fanfare and get out of the way. In other words, don't need to help them. Just help them. This applies to long-distance healing work and working with the trauma of the land as well. At the risk of pissing you off, I would suggest that you examine why you're interested in shamanic healing work. Make sure it's for the right reasons. If you're more interested in healing yourself through this work, then it's better not to do shamanic work until you've understood your motives better. Now, I want to be really clear here. This doesn't mean that you need to be perfect to be a shamanic practitioner. We'll always be working on something to be healed, every one of us. So balance is what's needed in the long run. We don't have to be perfect to be a good healer. But we do need to be able to step out of the way of our own stuff. Sometimes we think we know what someone needs, and we have a knee-jerk reaction. Oh, you've been abused, and underneath your sadness and your trauma, you need to be cleared. But maybe you're just projecting your own similar trauma on them. It might be that after talking with them and asking your spirit guides or maybe their own allies for their assessment of the situation, you discover that they needed whatever trauma they had. And maybe they have actually come to terms with it. And maybe they learned what they needed to about that situation and they moved on. Maybe there's nothing to be done there at all. And of course, another situation might be completely different. So we need to approach without an agenda, from a neutral, I don't know, kind of place, and set out to discover what we realize needs to be done, if anything. In my experience working with land and people that have been traumatized, I've found that in most cases, a light touch is better than a heavy-handed approach. In other words, less is often better than more. You can labor away for hours using technique after technique and end up exhausted, thinking you've done great work, when actually a simple prayer and a couple puffs of tobacco smoke or something else might have been all that was needed. Maybe a little song. Remember that shamanic work is efficient and practical, and there's no need for overdoing it, for overkill. The desire to overdo it is born of one of two things: being too zealous or not having faith in the techniques that you know and use. If you're busy racing from one technique to the other, maybe you don't trust that any of them can do the job. With greater confidence, you can settle on your plan of action and be out of there in a shorter time. None the worse for wear. So this includes shamanic work that you may be doing on yourself. Regarding working with land trauma, I found that more often than not, natural events are not so traumatizing to the land. For example, an avalanche that tears up a mountainside may not be a problem for the land. It might be a natural process. On the other hand, something that involves the deaths of many people, like an earthquake or maybe a big flood, usually requires more attention and needs the special help because of the trauma of the people, or even many animals injured or dying, as was the case in the Australian fires. We're still on the topic of neutrality in shamanic practice, and hopefully by now you're getting a feeling for its value and necessity. Here's a little more on the topic before we turn to actual practices to cultivate greater neutrality as a practitioner. Now, for Tibetan Buddhists who practice the ancient Bunpo shamanic path as well, cultivating an empty mind is a key to awakening. From their perspective, the human mind's most natural state is to be empty of content. The content being all those thoughts and feelings that are endlessly passing through our awareness. Now, this may sound strange, but if we see the mind as a bowl or a basket, then we see that it's a container, and its usefulness is to have the empty space to hold things. For example, a bowl might hold cherries, but tomorrow it might hold walnuts, and then later peaches, or nuts and bolts, or whatever. In the same way, a house is valuable because it's a container and has empty space inside of it that may get filled with furniture and possessions as succeeding families move in and out. So our minds are like that too. We're not the contents of our minds. We're the empty space that holds the content. And that's where our value is. Empty space is neutral. Content is full of fire and fury, but signifies not so much, to borrow a phrase from Shakespeare. As long as our minds are full of stuff, then there's no room for the supreme intelligence of the universe to flow through it. It's only by cultivating a quiet mind that we hit the lottery. So neutrality equals space to allow the highest states of consciousness to flow through us. Everything else is just distraction and blockage. It's like a dam stopping the natural flow of the river. In addition, the Tibetans tell us that the endless flow of thoughts and feelings will never stop. So what we have to learn to do is to ignore almost all of those thoughts and to get to the quiet behind them. And there we find our essence. The monkey chatter is where we find the machinations of ego. The master shaman requires stillness, the ultimate in neutrality. So that now that we've had this discussion, let's focus on some simple methods of creating stillness. And I do mean simple. The first one's called stopping the world. A shamanic practitioner's best friend is observation, self-observation. That's the ability to self-observe without condemnation, without judgment, without attitude, without opinion, without assumptions, and so on. To merely look and see clearly without voting or taking sides, analyzing, evaluating, and all those processes that masquerade as constructive. We don't need to rush into action trying to fix, straighten out, heal, or do anything about what we're observing. If we trust ourselves, we find that when we just observe, we can become quite clear about what the truth is, and maybe even what needs to be done. And this is so much quicker than analysis paralysis or action obsession. Once we're complete observing ourselves, we can then turn our observation to the other person or the situation and using the same neutral process, simply see what the truth is. Naturally, this takes practice and means that we'll have to overcome some bad habits developed over lifetimes. But what the heck? Better sooner than later. Might as well get started now. Here's another simple technique. Find the center of your head. Now, most of us, most of the time, we're all over the place. We think we know where we are, but our minds are wandering hither and yon, and much of the time, we may not even be in our bodies, even remotely. So the body is wandering around like a car, desperate for someone to be in the driver's seat, who has wandered off. This is not a good situation. Here's a good practice to rectify that. What's needed is an anchor point. Any point on the physical body can be an anchor point that calls us back. Even a pain or an itch, maybe a full bladder, an empty stomach. The physical body is always here right now. Our minds are not. Finding an anchor point is just a stepping stone. The best, most neutral, and safest place in your body is the third ventricle of the brain. Now, if you draw an imaginary line between the upper parts of your ears and another line from the region of your third eye to the back of your head, where these lines intersect is roughly where the third ventricle is located. It's also known as the Cave of Brahma or the Crystal Palace, and sometimes it's referred to as the upper room in esoteric traditions. The third ventricle is a small open space where cerebrospinal fluid flows through your brain to clean it and bring nutrients in. It's so central that all around it lie some of the most important structures of the brain. The pineal gland, the pituitary gland, the thalamus, and hypothalamus surround it. The corpus callosum is right nearby, along with the hippocampus and the ocular nerve. In other words, it's right near the absolute center of your awareness and consciousness. In addition, there's a strong connection through the brainstem and spinal cord to your heart. The brain and the chest, just like a flower on the top of a stem. Now just place your focus on that central place in your brain, and imagine that you're relaxing there in a nice, comfortable chair. Your eyes are like windows in front of you. And if your eyes close, the windows have the shades drawn. So now close your eyes for a moment and be there, right in that central place, that central room. Then raise the shades of your eyelids and open your eyes very slowly and see if you can remain right there in the third ventricle without rushing out of your eyes to the objects that you are seeing. Now, this takes practice, but in the end, it'll train you to remain in the most effective, powerful, and safe place in your whole body. A place that's absolutely neutral, where there is no fear whatsoever. What a good place to operate from. And again, I recommend that you practice that until it becomes like second nature to you. There's many more things that you can do with the upper room, so this is just the very beginning. Placing yourself there is the foundation, though. Okay, here we go with another practice. holding the paradox. In most cases, we err by taking sides. This includes internal dialogue as well as involvement in external dramas where there's an us versus them dichotomy or a this versus that issue. If we replace the versus with an and, we come closer to the truth. If you listen to almost any Zen master and their teaching, you'll hear them say over and over, not this, not that, meaning do not get caught in the polarized thought because it's almost always wrong. Here's an example. The student says, oh, Zen master, how can I escape suffering and instead pursue happiness? And the Zen master replies, not escape suffering, not pursue happiness, just be. Let's move on to another simple practice. Correct neutral now is what this is called. Sometimes we become upset, sad, angry, resentful, anxious, depressed, agitated, and we get thrown off course. Yet we still may need to take care of some shamanic business. Like, for example, maybe we have a long-distance healing to do. And we've got to get to it, even though we're upset. So if we don't have time to self-observe, we need a quick technique to get back to neutral. And here's one that's very effective, with practice, of course. Finding yourself triggered by whatever's gone on, hold your hand vertically centered in front of your chest, your thumb against your chest. You can use either hand. If you're using your left hand, your palm faces to the right. If you're alternatively using your right hand palm, then your palm faces to the left. Now issue the command, correct neutral now. This is a shortened command for return me to a neutral state now. Within moments, you'll automatically feel a calming and relaxing of whatever the trouble was. You may have to do this several times for maximum benefit over the period of several minutes. This is related to the basic rule that your word is law in the universe. What you say matters. Okay, well, moving on to another simple technique. This one's called keep don't know mind. We're often under the delusion that we need to know everything in order to function. We then demand of ourselves that we know or understand immediately. This usually only confounds us and makes us more confused than ever. The secret is to not know. It's okay not to know, even natural not to know, especially in shamanic work. We're constantly facing mystery, the unknown. What we know is based on what happened yesterday, not what is happening now. We're designed as curious, interested beings looking to find out. And that's how the quantum field is designed as well, to provide information to us on an as-needed basis. All we need to do is ask the right questions, and this triggers the quantum field to release information and the answers to our questions. And this leads us inexorably toward greater truths. This consists of a series of baby steps. So if you complain that you don't know what you're doing, that is actually perfectly okay. Most of us don't know what we're doing most of the time. Fine. Great leaders know this, but they listen carefully and they ask the right questions and then confidently know what the next step is. Adopt that strategy. Ask the right questions and listen carefully. I don't have to already know. I'm learning by observing and listening, which is leading me to formulate good questions that I then listen for the answers to. The next technique is to develop neutrality is saying, oh, is that so? To anything that happens. This is a Buddhist technique. This is to be used when you want to return to having a don't know mind when you've been triggered, which is very easy to do. Lots of things trigger us in life. A person can look at us wrong and it can be a trigger. We get upset. So you want to return to having a don't know mind when you've been triggered and you found yourself on some side of a polarity or found yourself to be very judgmental about something. For example, you may be triggered by the newscast you're listening to or something you've just been reading or something someone just said. It has amazing powers to bring you back to neutral or slightly in amusement even. You simply focus momentarily on what's troubling you, and you ask the question, oh, is that so? This is a neutral, contemplative statement, taking no sides, offering no judgment, or anything. It's not agreeing or disagreeing. There are many famous Buddhist teaching stories where a series of events take place that everyone proclaims as good or bad. But the meditating monk just says, oh, is that so? And maintains neutral calm. That is where we want to be as shamanic practitioners. There's a brilliant scene in the film The Seven Samurai, where a master samurai is sitting peacefully observing a flower. A number of assassins are sneaking up on him from behind. And at the critical moment of attack, he mobilizes and defends himself, and needless to say, he's the only one left standing. Here's another technique. What if? To be used when faced with similar situation where you're triggered or have become discouraged, anxious, or judgmental. You say, what if? And it can be followed by anything. What if I were soon to discover a very simple solution to this problem? What if, instead of not knowing what to do, I were to discover that I did intuitively know exactly what to do? It doesn't have to be what if. It could be another phrase like, can it be that? Can it be that I have the answer to this problem inside of me already? Can it be that, you get the idea, you make it up according to the situation that you're in, but you're asking a question that suggests that you already know, that there's a better solution within you, and that it's waiting. It's simply waiting for you. So there you have it. There are dozens of ways of finding neutrality in the moment, and some that are more involved, like the shamanic practice of erasing personal history. This involves gradually taking all the intensity and trigger points out of all the events of your life so that you can live in the moment without constantly having your trauma triggered by external events. Now, this is well worth pursuing, but it does involve an investment of time and energy. In addition, there are techniques from NLP, EFT, which is a tapping therapy, and EMDR, which is an eye movement method. They're all designed to remove traumatic trigger points, allowing you to remain neutral in the face of what used to trigger you. All are worthy and effective methods to get back to neutral. So I truly hope this has been useful to you in going over the value of neutrality on the shamanic path, and has given you some action-oriented ways of becoming more neutral so that you can be more effective and powerful as a practitioner. Many blessings.